But because of his great love for us, God, who is rich in mercy, made us alive with Christ, even when we were dead in transgressions. I'm going to read verse 4 and 5 again. But because of his great love for us, God, who is rich in mercy, made us alive with Christ, even when we were dead in transgressions. I want to speak to you today about how we can live a life as free people of God. What do we need to know about Ephesus? Well, Ephesus was a city like today, Santa Ponsa, no, like New York, like Rome, like Paris, like Berlin. It was one of the metropolitan cities of the time. It was a harbor city, so you would have people from all different kind of cultures come in on a daily basis. You know, those people working on ships, they were rough people. There was not a very high moral in these places. In fact, Ephesus is a place which has probably the best preserved ruins? Ruins of the ancient times. And I was there personally a couple of times. And what you notice when you walk through Ephesus is at every central spot in the city, there was a huge temple for worship of any type of God. And the way worship happened back in that time was that you would go to a temple prostitute that would be in the temple available for you, and the sexual intercourse you would have with the prostitute was the act of worship to the God, and in a way you would unite with that God. So what I'm trying to tell you is it was a really, really immoral place. If you walk down the streets in Ephesus, you will see little signs on the ground, and they will point you to the place where you find prostitutes, where you find the bars, because that is basically what those seamen were looking for, or the people in the city. It's a little bit maybe like Magaluf or Ballermann, yeah, Arenal. So what I'm trying to tell you is those people that Paul addresses here in these verses, those people, many of them, some were Jews maybe, but many of them converted from a really, really immoral lifestyle. Those were people, many of them probably, who didn't have a high sense of value. They didn't have a high sense of morality in their lives. So for them, it was quite a switch from becoming a person that was not believing to becoming a believer. And if you look at the first three verses here of chapter 2, Paul, in a sense, describes their condition before they were Christians. I think it'd be safe to say those people were very immoral people. They were fighting, I think. They were maybe ambitious, I don't know. But if those three categories that I just opened up to you fall under a lifestyle of sin, of being bound up, I think it's safe to say that this is what Paul means here in these verses. Those were people, let's put it this way, they were not free. They were not free. Free. Look what he says. He says, you guys in Ephesus, your past condition is you were dead in your transgressions and sins. You lived the lifestyle of constantly pushing the boundaries. Sin, it's an old-fashioned word. Actually, the literal translation for sin in the Bible is missing the target. I don't know if you ever observed how Charlie Brown does archery. Do you remember who read Charlie Brown comics when he was young? No one? Okay. So Charlie Brown, this figure, you know, always when he does archery, he does it like this. He takes the bow, he shoots the arrow, he just watches where the arrow hits the wall, and then he takes a pen and he draws two circles around where the arrow hit the wall. And that's the way many people live their lives, you know, like there's not a target they're trying to reach, which would actually make them free and happy, but they just shoot wherever and they say, whatever way I live my life, it's okay, and I'll just make sure that it's on target. Yeah. But no, the Bible says if you live in sin, it means missing the target. If you hit the target, you live healthy, live free. If you don't miss it, that's what the Bible calls sin. But then also there are consequences in your life. So he says that's the way you lived. You used to live like that when you followed the ways of the world. It's so interesting. If I walk with my daughter, you know, she's 10 by now. And she goes to a Christian school, and I tell you the things she's been exposed to in the Christian school, I don't want to mention them here because I don't want you and myself to blush. And you know, sometimes we take a walk, and we talk about life and about all the things she wants to know. Boys, sex, lesbians, homosexuals. I don't bring it up in our family. It's not like dinner time. We say, hey, let's talk about what homosexuality is. Oh, yeah, Talisa, you're interested too. You're only 7, but never mind. It's going to come up soon. No, it's the question she naturally brings to the table. And so we talk about that thing. And sometimes it strikes you. She says, Dad, I really understand what you're saying, but it's all the people around me, they think so differently. I don't know if you ever noticed that. If you're trying to live like a Christian, did you ever notice that people around you think you're crazy? That they think you're completely out of your mind? I mean, you know, one of the first questions we get asked every night at Balaman, it's so important to people, do you drink? Yeah, it's like they want to make sure the top priorities in their life would not be affected if they continue talking to us. It's like Christianity is like this disease that you might catch if you talk to somebody. Before I catch that disease, let me make sure that my life doesn't have to change in those 2 days. Do you drink? And can you have sex here? That is the most important thing, you know? And then if you say, well, look, I know what you're getting at. You want me to say now, because we're Christians, we can't have sex. And I hate that avenue to take because I know what it will trigger in the head. So I always try to explain it a little differently. I say, look, I mean, the thing with sex is like, for me, it's not the most attractive thought to wake up with somebody that pukes over me in the morning and consider that like a successful holiday. Yeah. I don't necessarily think it's a very good idea to catch a disease just because you don't know the person you're trying to register what's going on. It might be not such a good idea to break your heart and then one day find the person you're in love with and you have nothing left to offer, you know? So I try to talk about it like a little bit like that. But anyway, it's weird for people. Yeah. So that's what Paul's saying here. The world lives differently. And then a last thing I want to say is, the way he describes, and that's what makes it so hard for us Christians, he says, the devil, he describes him as a spirit. And I don't know, spirits, I mean, the Hebrew and the Greek word for spirit is ruach or pneuma. It actually means wind. Wind is something that's very hard to get a hold of. You know, I don't ever try to catch the wind. Yeah. So we think of the Spirit of God like that, but here the Bible says the devil operates like a spirit. I think the best way to describe it in my words would be, it's the devil is able to create a type of atmosphere that affects us. Sometimes you're talking to somebody and you think like, man, everything they say is there's nothing wrong with it, but still I have this weird feeling about what it's being said and the way it's being said. The devil operates like a spirit. Let me give you one story to illustrate it. I heard about a company in the U.S., a very successful company. This is a true story. It's not made up. And they were successful enough that they had to build for their corporation a huge new building. And so everybody at one day was moved over into the new building. And then after a week, production almost came to a stop. I don't know what they produced, because almost everybody was sick. And people said, this can't be a coincidence that 70% of our staff is sick suddenly. What's the problem? And they found out that the way the air conditioning was installed, like the angle in which the air blew towards the people sitting there, and you know when it's very hot and you feel like you're entering the fridge if you go into certain restaurants or places, how it affects your health. You know, I get sick all the time. And they found out that the angle the air conditioning was blowing and I don't know, the temperature, whatever, that was causing everybody to be sick. And for huge amounts of money, everything had to be reinstalled. So what I'm trying to say is, like, air conditioning of an air conditioner, it's not really tangible. But it's there. It fills the room. And it makes, and it's in that situation, it made people sick. And in the same way, there can be a spirit over a place. There can be a spirit that we cultivate in our families or that we allow in our families. That's just an environment in which we are. And it constantly wants to pull you back into a lifestyle that's unhealthy. I mean, I sometimes think of the people who have to work here in Magaluf and El Arenal. You're looking for a job, yeah, and you're trying to really keep your heart clean, but everything around you, the whole day, affects you. The music, the way people are dressed, the way the people are talk. And now, but Paul says, look, guys, I understand where you're coming from. He says to you, I know where you're coming from. I know what you're in. But this condition of living locked up, of being under the influence of Satan, under the spirit of Satan, this is something of your past. There's no need to live like that anymore. You can be free. And how does he do that? I think there's an extremely important word here in verse 4. It says, God saw you basically in that condition that you were in, bound up, although there were no physical bars around you. And because of his great love for you, because God saw you, how you were struggling, how you were bound up, how you were trying to fight all these influences, because of his great love. That's his motivation, his driving force. Because of his great love, he, verse 4, reached out to us. He made us alive with Christ when we were dead in our transgressions. So what does the Bible say? You were dead. It felt dead in your life. And then Christ, because of his love, he came, and when he died at the cross, it's almost like you were beamed back 2,000 years. You died with him. Yeah? This old lifestyle, this old you, it died in that place. And then the power of God, the same power that raised Jesus from the dead, that made you alive. So this is what happened at the cross. But let us think about one moment for the motivation. It's God's love. If you take the three examples that I gave you, I talked a little bit about pornography, I talked about overreacting, I talked about ambition. I don't think what I'm going to say now is true for all areas in which we're locked up, but I think they're certainly true for those three areas I spoke about. If you step into those unhealthy patterns of behavior, what is it actually that's causing you to do that? Listen to me. I think it's a lack of understanding of the love of God. You might have to stick with me for a second, but let me say this again. What is causing you to step into unhealthy patterns of behavior is a lack of understanding of the love of God. This man who is so ambitious and drives everyone around him against the wall, what is actually driving him? It's this desire deep in his heart to be somebody, to play a certain role, to be recognized in a certain circle of people. It's the little boy with 3 years old who acts up to get the attention of his mother, still haven't grown out of this. And because he's longing for somebody to take him serious, for somebody to love him, for somebody to say, you are a great guy. And that's why he can't stop. He does it over and over and over and over again. It's a lack of acceptance and love in his heart. What's the deal with this woman who gives out to her husband all the time? You know, there's this very strange dynamic between men and women. Do you know that? I mean, I know this might be a stereotype that I'm giving you now, but women, when they get agitated, they tend to talk more and louder and faster. Yeah? Men, when they get annoyed, they stop talking. They don't say anything. They go away. They leave the room. And see, we as men, we many times win by that, you know, because I mean, look, you just imagine you go to a counselor and the man says, well, I'm always keeping quiet and calm, and she starts yelling at me. And because Jesus lives in me, I control my feelings. But she's in bad need of counseling. You know? It's very easy to win this argument. You know? But the thing is this, the woman, She talks faster, she talks louder, she talks more, because what is it that she wants? She wants your attention. She wants to feel that you say, "Yes, sweetheart, I know." Do you know that video, "It's Not About the Nail"? Who knows that video? Oh, I should have shown you that. I'll give it to Rob, you can show it next week. So, what she wants is, can you please show me that you understand, that you take my opinion serious? If you give out to your kids, you say, "Hey, do you actually listen to me? What is it that drives you crazy?" You can talk, you can say something, and they seem not to listen. They don't seem to respect you. They don't seem to take serious what you say. And it drives you crazy. You want to be heard. You want to be valued. You don't want to be treated like dirt by your kids. You want to feel that you're somebody, valuable. Same thing. What is it about pornography? There's one thing I didn't do so far, but I'm sure many people did it. Not in this room, maybe, but maybe yes. You know, there are hotlines where you can talk, where you can call women. And they will tell you over the phone how great you are. I mean, why does a man watch pornography or a woman? I guess it's a perverted sense of looking for intimacy. I mean, people, they want to have sex because they look for intimacy. They want to be touched. They want to be told how great they are. And then you call somebody and you pay for somebody telling you how great you are. That's what's driving them towards that. So what I'm saying, instead of fighting the symptoms, if we look at the root of the problem, it has something to do with a lack of acceptance, a lack of love, a lack of recognition, which you're simply empty. I want to show you a picture. This is a picture. This is a picture I put on Facebook a couple of weeks ago because it struck me. So, when I was in seventh grade, I was done with arts. They gave us an option, do you want to take Latin or arts? It was a no-brainer for me. I took Latin, I was done with arts. We had a French art teacher, she was every man's nightmare. I would be confident to say, despite the fact that I'm a terrible artist, with a little bit of instruction, a little bit of time, a little bit of training, I would be able to get this picture done. Who's with me? All right. What I can say about it is, the color I kind of like. If I would have a big wall, I would put it up there. It's not that I think it's terrible, or I mean, that's a matter of taste, but I personally don't think it's a terrible picture. It's the colors, the mix of colors I kind of like. So now, I want to ask you a simple question. If I would paint that picture, and if I would put it on eBay, trying to sell it, what do you think I would get for it? I was thinking maybe if I put it on for a week and I get some of my friends, you know, like to push the price up a little bit so people will get a sense of it's being valuable. Maybe I get $50, yeah? Maybe. You think I'm pushing it, yeah? Maybe $50, you know? It could very much be that if I sell that picture, that I will have to pay for mailing it to the person, you know? Somebody says, "I'll take it for free if you pay for the mail," you know? Now, this picture was sold for $76 million. $76 million. American dollars to the royal family of Qatar. Are you still here? You might want to change your career, huh? $76 million. The artist that painted it is a very famous artist. His name is Mark Rothko. If you would be interested in art, you would know what I'm talking about. Mark Rothko. So I was asking myself the question, why do I have to pay for mailing it to somebody if somebody wanted it at all? And this guy gets $76 million for it. It's the same picture. You know why? The only difference is, or the only question that people have in their minds is, out of which hand came this picture? Who drew it? If Mark Rothko paints it, 76 million. If Garrett Elsner pays it, $50. Can produce the same picture, but it's the value the picture holds is because of the artist. Look, you might look in the mirror in the morning and you say, I kind of look ordinary. You might look at your musical skills, at your business skills, at your skills at your job, and you say, I'm nothing special. I'm not like this shining star that people naturally would admire. Everybody telling me, every day telling me how great I am and how the world wouldn't spin without me, you know. And you might not be that person. You might be an ordinary picture. But you see, your value is defined by who created you. You are priceless. You are valuable. You are loved. You are precious simply because you were created by the hand of God. Every human being that exists, every baby that sits here in this room, it's created by the biggest and greatest artist that there ever could be. And because he made you, you are priceless. You are valuable. So I want you to see the connection between that truth and freedom. Look, how would your behavior patterns change? In every aspect of your life, if you would really, really, at a very deep God level, would understand that it is the love of God that reached out to you and that paid for you and that united you with Christ's death and resurrected you, made you alive. You know, like, when people start to understand God's love, it changes everything. It changes everything. You see, if somebody says, I love you, like it says here that the love of God reached out to you and united you with Jesus in his death and in his resurrection, you naturally ask the question, how do I know? How do I know that somebody really loves me? And, you know, I mean, if you go to Ara Renal tonight, there'll be somebody quickly telling you, hey, we love you, baby. You're special. Special prize. No. No, I would die for you. Yeah, you would die for you. My baby. I mean, words are spoken so easily, you know. And maybe those words were spoken to you, and you know they were not worth much. I guess if you're willing to give yourself into the hands of somebody, you just really, really want to make sure that their confession of love is true. Yeah. And usually the way we look for that is we watch their deeds. We watch how they respond in situations that would potentially cost them a sacrifice. In Germany, there's a big debate at the moment about refugees, because 400,000 refugees are being brought to our nation, and Germans are responding very well at the moment. But there was a newspaper article last week, and it said, we think that very likely the willingness of Germans to help refugees stops the moment it will start to cost us a sacrifice. As long as we just give out of our affluence, it doesn't matter much. We can be nice. So I think when we want to know if somebody loves us, we look at their deeds. And you see, sometimes the death of Jesus seems so detached to us because it's 2,000 years ago. But if you ponder on it, and you make yourself aware again that he really did it out of love, didn't have to, but he did it out of love for you, I think it begins to captivate our hearts again. And freedom will be an automatic result. The resurrection power of Jesus works in you. It means that wherever you encounter death, that there is a force in you, a substance in you that will allow you to live differently, although around you nothing has changed. I finish with one last story. When I was 15, my mother took me to Africa. It was one of the great vacations we did. We did a safari. And of course, as a 15-year-old, you want to see the big animals, the lions and the hippos and whatever, crocodiles and so on. For me, naturally, the highlight was the lions. So we were sitting in a Jeep with our driver, and he would drive through the national park with us. And then we would approach a tree where there were five or six lions lying in the shade. And we came so close to those lions that I really got scared, you know. I mean, we were literally like 4 or 5 meters away. And the engine was running, you know, but that didn't really, that really didn't put me at ease. So, of course, the question in my heart was, is this not dangerous to be here? And I asked the driver, and he said, no, it's not particularly dangerous. And I said, why? And he said, because the lions have eaten. If they lie in the if they lie here in the shade like they do, it means they've eaten. And they're usually very lazy. By the way, the male lions, the only thing they do is eat and sleep and have sex anyway. It's the female lions that hunt. The males, kingdom world, life's still okay. And he said, they've eaten, so they're not dangerous. They're not like people who are evil at heart. You know, like, there's no lion who says, I'm going to exterminate the whole antelope population. You know, it's like, it's not in them. They only hunt if they're hungry. And I found that very interesting. Look, the danger of all the things Paul mentions here, they are around us. There is an evil spirit around us. We sometimes what we experienced in our lives in the past haunts us still today. The memories are still there. So as long as we're on this earth, we can't get rid of that, particularly if you live and work on this island. It is just the way it is. This is not going to change so quickly. But this danger, and that's where the illustration, I have to bend it a little bit, but this danger becomes controllable if you've eaten. If you're filled. If you're full of the love of God. It's not that you're not aware of what's going on around you, but there is not this immediate pull towards certain behaviors or towards certain sins. So the key is to live a free life, to understand the love of God, and to live out of that resurrection power. Does that make sense? All right, let's stand up together and let's pray. Alex, can I ask you to come?